Spring? Is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. They've designed must-have travel styles for when you need to jet. The lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit makes these shoes some of the most packable styles ever. That means more comfort and less baggage. Take the Superlight Tree Runner on your next adventure. Its cushy, lightweight foam midsole supports every step, and the extra outsole traction gives you the grip to just go for it. The eucalyptus fiber upper adds next-level breathability to keep you going all day. Plus, the Superlight Tree Runner is comfortable and ready to go right out of the box. So, what can you do in a Superlight shoe? What can't you do is the better question. And because they're super packable, the real question is, where are you taking them? Experience how Allbirds redefines comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com, code SUPER24.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rob Has a Podcast. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and we are here tonight to recap the Sunday night episode of Big Brother Canada 7.
And welcome
and
to
it's our first Sunday, or our second Sunday recap of the season, but the first one that we're doing now that we had stopped doing them, but now we're doing them again because you guys said, hey, we want our Sunday recaps back, and I am nothing if not somebody that wants to give the fans what they want. So here I am to talk to you about this episode, and I've brought with me a lovely guest for us to talk to. It's Ryan from Big Brother Canada 6. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How's it going? It's a long time no talk.
Yes, it's. I think it's been since we talked to you after the season about everything that went down.
Yeah, it's been a while. Been a while. It's good to be back, though.
Been a fun while. It was fond memories of Big Brother Canada 6.
Yeah.
Also with us tonight is Brent. How you doing, Brent?
I am doing so great. It is so great to be on an episode recap with number one, a member of the Big Brother Canada alumni who has not blocked me on social media. And number two, everyone's favorite bitter juror, Ryan Valentine. How you doing, Ryan? It's so great.
I'm doing good, man. You know, in order to block somebody, you really have to give a shit what they think. Because I don't, I mean, you know, like at the end of the day, it's a hooker with a heart of poison, and you can spew that poison as much as you want. It's not going to hurt me. You don't know me. So
exactly.
All you know is what you saw on the show. And that was a guy you didn't get along with too well, apparently, but that doesn't bother me.
But I have grown to love, and you're honestly, your cool sense of humor after the show and your ability to just let it roll off your back has totally won me over. Even
well, if I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, Ryan is one of the alumni that does not take my advice and just immediately block Brent as soon as you get out of the house. That's really what everyone should do. But we are not here to talk about blockings or Twitter.
No.
We are here to talk about Big Brother Canada 7. So let's talk about this episode tonight. We got a lot of stuff. We got the HOH competition. We got the introduction of the lounge and the blood veto. Then we saw the blood veto be given away, you might say. And then the nominations themselves. So let's start with the blood veto, because I think that's kind of what's on everyone's mind right now is like, what is it? What just happened? Why did Kira walk away with it? And like, what can we expect from this? So, Ryan, do you have any ideas? Because basically what we saw was they went into the lounge. We've seen Damien try to get this blood veto for a while. Then it disappears and then it reappears. And they have to unanimously decide who is going to receive this veto. But they still don't know. And we still don't know what it even does. So do you have any ideas, Ryan?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities that it could be. I mean, you know, you've seen so many different powers handed out over my 800 plus year or hours of watching.
Yay!
But if you take a look back at what it could be, when you see that it's a blood veto, to me, that indicates it can be used. You know, you want to see it used at any time. Is it that if you use it to pull someone off, you are yourself the nominee, which would be different from any other veto, or you could be eligible to be nominated. Is it that you pull somebody off and all of a sudden you get to choose the replacement nominee yourself? Like we've seen some other powers being played in the past. All kinds of different possibilities for this one. But I mean, the idea that they put blood on it would indicate that, you know, something, it's going to have a tragic consequence just for using it. And I think that may mean as much as putting yourself on the block in order to save somebody else, which would really limit the idea that somebody would end up using it. And at the same time, really crush the whole buildup that they've had for it, because nobody's going to put themselves on the block in order to save somebody else. Or at least I don't think so. I can't imagine doing it myself. Yeah. At that point, it would just flop the twist the whole season if that's what it ends up being.
Ryan, I have a question for you. So sure. Let's go back in time, and let's say this was Big Brother Canada 6, and this blood veto thing happened. And Kayla is the HOH. And yeah. You know that if you're not definitely going up, there's a good possibility that you could be on the block. And this scenario happens. Basically, what's happening to Kiki right now? What, I don't know if you can put yourself back in the mindset you were in the house, but would you have, like, there are two paths you can take here. You can take the path of least resistance and say, you know, I'm going to take myself out of it. I'm not going to go for it because I know nobody will let me have it, because I might be a target this week. I'm just going to fight for the veto and say, you know, hands off. Or you could literally sit out there forever saying, look, I'm not leaving until I get it. And I just want to be safe
in the room.
Okay.
I'd still be in the room.
Okay.
The minute Olivia put me on the block, I knew I was in our double eviction. I was on the block every opportunity someone had the rest of the way. And I knew I was always in danger of going home. If you put a veto in front of me and say, all you have to do is wear your other house guests into giving this to you, I could still be in that room if I needed to be. And we're 9 months out. I would have soiled myself without question. I would have gone without food and water. I had a lot more body weight to give than everybody else in that house did. I mean, I could have gone a long, long time in that room before anybody else would have given me any kind of indication that they were getting it instead of me. So I think, especially with the HOH not in the room, which I do think was a good idea from the producers, because if Sam's in the room, she can influence this whole decision by saying, look, if you agree to give it to this person, I guarantee you won't go up on the block. But with Sam's not in the room, that allows this to be a bit more of a fight. Now, I know that the feeds go down repeatedly for hours and hours on end. So we don't know how long this particular one, this particular outage was, do we? I assume.
It wasn't that long.
It wasn't very long. I think it was just like an hour or so.
So if it was a who wants it and all you have to do is put your hand up and eventually you're going to get it, that's god-awful. Because I mean, I would have sat in that room for days and days and days. The idea that Kiki took herself out of the running is criminal, to me. She's saying, I know I'm going up on the block, but I have faith that you guys will keep me anyway, and I'm not going to go for this. Terrible move.
Well, two things. Number one, I agree with you. It was just like game malpractice on her part not to try to get this. And Taryn, I have to believe that if she had really tried, if she said, look, I'm not leaving until I get this veto, that she would have gotten it. I don't think there would have been that much resistance. I think maybe even, you know, they would have like fought her on it. They would have argued with her. Maybe a half hour goes by, but eventually they're going to go, okay, look, just let her have it. Like we have there are a couple other people we could get. We could get out Corey. We could get out Mark. We could get out, you know, Este. Damien. There are people who, not really Mark, but other people who are not in the alliance, the main alliance of the Pretty Boys, who would be, okay, we'll let you have it. You know what I mean? I do feel like that would have happened for her. But on the other hand, as I said on Twitter, and I'm not giving anybody a pass, but I do think they the producers I'm talking about miscalculated just a little bit on their timing of this by doing it after an HOH has been crowned, but before the nominations, I do feel like is a misstep on their part, because even though Sam was up in the HOH room and not present, her right-hand man, Adam, was right down there leading the charge to get Kira the veto. And you have to feel like if you're a house guest, Ryan, that if you are not, like, let's say you're not really sure if you're going to go on the block. You're kind of, maybe I could, but you're trying to talk yourself into believing that maybe I really wouldn't. You don't want to fight too hard in front of Adam, knowing that he's going to go right back and say, well, you know, it would have gone to Kira, except for, you know, Ryan was the ass who wouldn't take no for an answer.
In the minute that Kira, I don't know, do you refer to Kira and Kiki? Is that how we're
differentiating? Yeah, Kira, yes. Kira is non-binary and Kiki
As soon as Adam starts saying, yeah, I'm for Kira getting it, that should have been a huge red flag for anybody else who didn't think they were safe. You know, at that point, I mean, you know, Estes feels like she's safe because of Dane, and you know, to this point in the game, she probably is. But Kiki doesn't have that safety. So stepping away from it at all, as soon as Adam starts suggesting that someone else other than you should have it, if you feel like you're in danger at all, you have to be able to fight for it. And you can't stand back and let that happen to you. People have been letting that happen to them all season long. All season long, people have been saying, well, I don't want to make waves. I don't want to cause a fuss. I don't want to stick my head out too far because, you know, then you know, the tallest dandelion gets its head chopped off. Well, we're what, 5 evictions deep now with these people? Like, how have you not seen the pattern so far that the path of least resistance is just going to get you evicted? You need to cause trouble. You need to cause a fight. You need to stand up and actually do something for yourself. Otherwise, you're going home.
Yeah, I think what's maybe interesting about this is that I think that part of it might have been the bystander effect, where because afterwards, a lot of them talked about, like, well, we thought, like, nobody actually thought we'd all agree that Kira would get it. We thought somebody would say something. And Essie was like, yeah, I was the only one that said anything. I thought other people were going to say things too. And, like, it just, like, nobody really thought this was going to go through. And then all of a sudden, just like that, it was like, oh, it's over already. Like, everyone's already agreed. And I thought somebody was going to say something first. And they just kind of found themselves in that position. And then I think another part of it is Brent, what you mentioned, where this is happening before nominations. They assumed that Sam was watching. They have Adam down there directing them toward one person, basically implying, if you argue against this, like, watch out. And then also, you know, the way that the Pretty Boys have been operating in the house and running the house is through, you know, compliance, making people go along with the numbers, with what the house wants. They've been training these people to do this from day one. So it's not super surprising that it would be shown, you know, evidenced through this procedure where they have to unanimously agree to something. So I think there are some interesting components to this as a twist. I think it kind of fails for television, but I did find some interesting sort of psychological impacts here, Ryan.
Well, I think we're going to need to find out what it does before we decide whether or not it flops as a twist.
Yep.
The way it was awarded, Twitter thinks it's a flop, of course.
Yeah.
And a lot of the fans will go, oh, what a flop, because they just all agreed to give it to Kira, who, you know, the internet seems to hate, although they're warming, I guess. I don't know, the last couple of days.
Well, seems to be that it's off and on, depending on what their current aim is.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end of the, like, I really think that they're stepping into a possibility of this being incredible. It's whether or not the power can impact the game and whether or not Kira's going to use it. And by the way, I mean, you know, we'll get to the nominations at the end, but how does somebody walk away with a secret power that nobody knows what it does and not get nominated? I mean, well,
part of it was that they were safe for the week.
Sorry?
Part of it was that they were safe for the week once they got the
meet up. Okay, so I've got a 9-year-old. He makes a lot of noise.
No, it's cool. I forgot about that part too. Not that I ever thought that Sam was ever going to nominate Kira, but I think maybe there was a rumbling at one time, I think maybe early on in her HOH reign. But yeah, that the person that you decided to award the blood veto to, they are immune for the week.
Couldn't be nominated and also cannot compete in the veto.
Yes.
So, you know,
if I can't be nominated, why do I care if I'm in the veto?
I don't know, right?
Somebody who played in so many vetoes and just wished for a seat on the couch. it's not all it's cracked up to be. sometimes just having the night off would have been fun.
Yeah.
But the idea that Kira got it is amazing to me. I'm shocked by it, but really all the people that she really had issues with are gone or going. You know, Chelsea was uncomfortable with the way sometimes that she was being held, or Kiki thought that she's, you know, being a little aggressive towards her. But those people are gone. Mama Kay had a problem with Kira. She's gone. So maybe Kira's got more allies in the house now than she had vocally anyway before.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things about Kira getting it is that I think Kira of the house guests, maybe Kira and Mark would be maybe second place here, is one of the, I would say, least socially conscious people in the house, the least sort of self-aware people, where they will often just kind of like, you know, butt into conversations and not realize that they're intruding, and they're kind of like a little bit of a social pariah in the house. And it, so, you know, they are the ones that are like the most likely to, in this scenario, just kind of push forward blindly, regardless of the social consequences, because that's just kind of how they operate in general in the house. And so in many ways, you see the like the least socially savvy player in the house end up getting the unanimous decision to award them the thing just because they're the only ones who are willing, who are, you know, ignoring the consequences enough to actually push for it here.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny, actually. I will say this, that, you know, Kira, I know it hasn't been the best as far as playing Big Brother, but they have done a really good job in this particular scenario, maybe in spite of themselves. But like, I felt like they were actually putting forward an argument that, if you didn't think about it too hard, kind of made sense. Like, hey, I'm probably not going to get nominated this week anyway. You don't want to screw up the game. If this is the fair thing to do, I'll just hold on to it for the week and I won't use it. Of course, then later on, they thought about using it when we talked about. But yeah, I thought there was a little bit of an argument to what Kira was saying. So I thought, you know, we've been coming down on them pretty hard. At least I have. On the round table about their strategic ability. Obviously, that's not up to par. Social ability, not great. But I thought they did an okay job here.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Power evaporates after this week, though?
We don't know anything. Yeah. And Kira has been telling the house guests that they don't know anything either. So, like, that the diary room, or Arissa has not secretly, or Marsha, for heaven's sake, have come on and said anything to Kira about what is in the power or how the blood veto is even used at this point. Given that we didn't get any more information, I'm inclined to believe them.
I totally believe that.
All right,
production doesn't give you in my experience, I did not you know, when I was HOH, I was asking every single day whether or not Veronica and Maren can vote and we're going to be in the vote and whether or not I should consider their votes, and they just said they'd get back to me.
So, oh yeah, that happened. That happened.
Yeah, and that happened this season too with Corey. Yeah, so,
different. So
I mean, it
call me crazy.
Would have made, yeah, exactly. It could have changed how things went. You know, all kinds of ways. But yeah, if Kira is saying that they don't know what the power does, I believe that in absolute.
Taryn, I was hoping it was a little bit like Ali White, when you know, she got the veto, and she's like, you know, in the rules, or Arissa comes on the screen and says the rules or something, like, you know, you can't tell anybody about this or you'll risk getting kicked out of the house. I was hoping that it was like that, but I don't think it's like that at all.
No. There's not a whole lot of upside to not telling people, especially your ally, what it is. So, you know, I really am inclined to believe that Kira does not know what this is, nor do we. So, you know, maybe we'll find out on Wednesday, or maybe it will come into place like out of nowhere on Wednesday. But again, it would be like, I don't think we would find out before the veto ceremony what it is, because again, like, Arissa's not there to tell us. So who is going to tell us except for the players themselves? And that doesn't seem likely at this point. So either it just kind of like, boom, all of a sudden lights go up and Arissa appears on the TV screen with a pre-recorded message telling them what they need to do with the blood veto, or this is not going to come into play this week, but might come into play the following week, which I think would make sense on a fairness perspective, given that Sam was not able to even get the blood veto. And so for it to also screw with her HOH is like, that's really rough. Obviously, luckily for her, it went in a direction that it probably wouldn't screw up her HOH. But, you know, the more likely scenario here is that the majority alliance is going to get this power And, you know, again, it's one of these twists where it really just benefits the majority in the House. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's how it actually would operate on a normal
curiosity,
level.
Wasn't it during Big Brother Canada 4 when they had to all agree on whether it was Kelsey or LaVita to come back? Wasn't it like the main majority alliance that got their way as well? And everybody just kind of just agreed and acquiesced to them? Yeah, that's what happens, Big Brother Canada. Don't do this again. You would have thought you would have learned the first time.
Fear certainly plays a part in this. You know, if you're not in that majority and you feel like you're not, then going along kind of, you go along to get along. But I mean, it's how much in danger you feel like you are. And so Kiki really misstepped here, I think.
But, so
I mean, it also depends on what it is. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a post-vote veto. Maybe
I think she had to go for it.
Before Arisa announces the vote. You can decide to veto a nom and you re-vote.
Yeah, I think from Mark's perspective, I think that it was a mistake to not go for it. However, obviously, Mark feels decently safe no matter what because he has the pretty boys and he kind of should. But still, I would go for it and, you know, control the power for the pretty boys. But for Kiki, at this point in time, she knows that she's going on the block and she has no real reason to believe that she'd be safe. In fact, at this point in time, she is considering the idea that maybe there's a guys thing happening. At this point in time, she is considering the idea that, if that's true, then I won't be safe, but I feel confident I'm safe anyway. But if I leave, that would be really telling, wouldn't it? She's has no indication that she would remain safe this week and no reason to not go for this veto because she knows she's already going up on the block. So I do not understand the decision from her. I mean, she was clearly trying to send some kind of message about like, you know what? I want to respect the process, but that's not going to get you anywhere. I don't know.
No, the process gets you to the jury house.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it gets you out of the house entirely.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was already celebrating that too. So whatever. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I will say I am inclined to believe that the blood veto might come into effect this week because of how it worked, where, you know, the holder of the blood veto is immune and cannot compete in the actual veto. That implies to me that maybe the blood veto needs the person to be off the block in order for it to be used in the way they want it to be used. And if that's the case, then it would have to be used this week or Kira would have to be safe for another week. So otherwise, why have them immune this week in the way that they do? I don't know. Brent, what do you think?
I think that my take on it, I kind of agree with what Ryan said earlier. The fact that it's called a blood veto, I feel like you have to pay with blood in this case, your own life. I feel like they're not telling Kira for a reason. They're safe this week. Fine. That's the good thing. But moving forward, if you use it, I have to believe that you're probably the likely replacement. So if Kira decides to veto Sam off the block, I think Kira goes up as the replacement. That's why it's not a regular veto. It's a blood veto. So
I just don't see why anybody would ever use it, though.
Well, they're not telling her, though, or them. The production hasn't told Kira that
they would go to use it, and then, surprise, you're
it's
going
a blood
up.
Veto. Yeah, we didn't tell you. You didn't ask that, or you know, whatever. I hear you that nobody would ever do that willingly, but they're not telling them for a reason, and I have to believe that this is the reason. Otherwise, they would tell them.
I love the idea that they might not have any idea how it works and just try and use it anyway.
Yeah. That's a twist I can get behind. Like,
that's the most spectacular twist of all time, then.
Thanks.
If you just say, look, you've got a veto and you know what veto means in this game. So if you choose to use it, we'll let you know how it works when you do. That could be the craziest twist ever, but it would also mean that there's no way they would use it.
Yeah, I gotta say, I don't think this would be the thing. I mean, it makes sense when it's Kira, but imagine if, like, it was Damien got it, and, you know, he finally has the blood veto after a whole season, and everyone loves him, and then he goes and he uses it to, like, he's gonna use it, and it's finally gonna break up the pretty boys, except, no, it's you, Damien, on the plot. That would, like, the viewers would riot. They'd burn the house down. I think that would be really bad.
It would be so spectacular to watch the internet after that happened, though. It would just be so great to see this kind of thing hit Twitter unexpected. I love the idea that like, I have no problem with production messing with the game. I don't. I think sometimes it's hysterical. It's hilarious. It's part of the game. If you don't know that production is playing too, then you're not paying attention. That's fair. I don't mind the idea that something just absolutely crazy is going to happen. And it could be, you know, any number of things. The blood veto. I mean, when they went in and said, oh, it's a ruby veto. No, that doesn't make any sense. But seeing that, you know, it's got to have dire consequences, and it's going to be something that really makes it difficult to use. And so for that reason, I actually think it might not be that you go on the block if you use it, because then that eliminates the possibility of using it when you're nominated.
Yeah.
And so I think it's got to be, it might even be something of, hey, you're also picking the replacement, which gets blood on your hands because you're picking
that's just the diamond.
Company. Yeah. They just renamed the diamond power veto, but this one's not broken. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta find a new hook every year, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. You were on the receiving end.
Yeah,
you were on one of the receiving end of one of these kinds of twists. Ultimately, the Canada Save twist.
Thanks, Canada.
So, I guess not super surprising to hear that you don't think these are too bad.
Honestly, it's more than just like, I mean, you know, Canada saved me for another 7 days and sent me to the jury house, which was very beneficial for me psychologically, so I appreciated it. But it didn't get me any further in the game being saved, and that twist, you know, cost Erica her game, to which she reminds me when we when we see twists like this again, it's always happened. I mean, go back to Big Brother originally, and still in Big Brother UK, the audience chooses who goes home. The audience is, Canada is always a part of the game at some point in the season. And production is always a part of the game at some point in the season too. They're going to forward who they want.
I would like to be more a part of the game this season, Ryan. I saw Peter Brown on Twitter saying that he hopes that the results of this season show that production actually does not interfere with everything. Otherwise, they wouldn't want the season that they're currently getting right now.
Maybe they're okay with the pretty boys running roughshod.
It makes it easier to edit. That's all I'm saying. They had trouble last season. I mean, Ryan, one of the things you talked about is that you need to be aware of production. Is that something that you were aware of when you were playing, that like, hey, in case there's any kind of vote, I want to make sure I'm giving production what they want and giving the audience what they want, you know, or really for any kind of, you know, twist or something like that?
Well, I don't understand why anyone wouldn't want to give production what they want. You know, like, you're on a TV show. And when the producers say, this is what we think, that's what you think. I mean, it's how the show works. But yeah, I mean, again, somebody asked me after my season, they said, well, why didn't you ever talk to Canada until the Canada Votes week? Like, I knew Canada was voting, or that I had any idea what was going on, or that I hadn't been talking to the feeders constantly for 40 days anytime I was alone. Whether or not I was in one of those four camera squares, I was just yammering at the camera nonstop. So the idea that, you know, you do have to talk to the cameras, you do have to talk to the feeds, you do have to talk to the internet, you do have to talk to production. I mean, effectively, those one-way conversations are still, you're pleading with production as well. You know, like, you're letting them know exactly what you're thinking. You're letting them know where you are. And again, it's not Jeopardy or quiz show or whatever, you know, it's an entertainment show. It's not a game show. And so you have to remember that when you're looking at it, and remember that everything about the show is all relevant to how you get to the end of the show. And, you know, I got saved with a Canada vote, which was incredibly timely for me. I just wasn't able to translate that into any further game. And that's why I went home. You know, I did my damnedest, but it just didn't work out.
No, I always say this, anytime we do like a rankings podcast or whatever, I always talk about the fact that, you know, Big Brother is not a game that takes place on in a vacuum. It's a TV show for a reason. And you have to incorporate that, I feel like, when you're evaluating people and how well they're doing, because production is an element of any Big Brother game, US or Canada, maybe big, maybe small, but it's there. So I feel like you have to take that into account. Anyway.
And that's the thing, too. I mean, I see on Twitter all day that Anthony is steering the house and Anthony is guiding people and Anthony's doing this and Anthony's doing that. How much do you see on the show of Anthony? Almost nothing. Anthony shows up every once in a while, but apparently, according to everything that I'm seeing on my feed updates from everybody on Twitter, is Anthony's this evil mastermind that's you know, generating eviction after eviction after eviction. And then on the show, you never see Anthony at all. So, you know,
that's a really good point.
You're just saving him for the end of the season.
I don't know, and I'm not saying anything here, but I did note that in Survivor that Julia was talking about the fact that she felt like she wasn't being shown as much as she would have liked to she's a woman of color. Sorry, on Survivor. I don't know if you're watching. So what'd I say?
No, I was making a joke about how I haven't seen her on the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that was a good one. I like that, Taryn. Very well done. and the fact that we're not getting Anthony, I mean, I can't remember the last time we saw somebody like Anthony on the show who was this good at strategy, but also this kind of suave and, you know, a little macho. I mean, like Aika couldn't even keep a straight face during her interview with him, for God's sake, because he's
full on mustache twirling villain. We don't usually get that.
Yeah. And we're not seeing any of it. It's all Dane. In fact, I don't really see much of Mark, but I think we saw Mark this week in this episode because of the fact that he was going to be nominated. We see Adam because of Sam, but we never see Anthony change that Big Brother.
Yeah, I was surprised that that in that blood veto discussion, we didn't get Anthony just being like, all right, guys, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
I feel like if it had lasted a little longer, that would have happened.
I mean, he does it in front of the whole room. Yeah, he wouldn't do that. The idea that he has that connection with everybody. I think by sitting back, Anthony's playing a really great strategic game because he doesn't have large scale conversations. He has small one-on-ones with people. And fortunately for him, these people aren't running to each other to discuss the conversation. Yeah. They're just accepting what he has to say and moving on.
And we have learned in the past that we think, oh, well, that can't last forever. But sometimes it does last forever. By the way, I never really noticed that Anthony wasn't on the episodes as much because I see him on the feeds all the time. You know, he's always, you know, moving and shaking on the feeds. And I just kind of didn't realize that I don't really see him on the episodes very much. But you're right. He's not there. No,
it's Dane and Adam. Dane and Adam and whoever they're going against that particular week. But Anthony does a lot of the work behind the scenes. So hopefully he starts to get credit for it as the season moves on.
Because a lot of this is him. I mean, I do feel like this week will be decided by Anthony. Yeah, I mean,
that's the thing too, where it reminds me of what they struggled with in Big Brother Canada 6 when it came to editing. They really, you know, they had an easy time with Kayla because Kayla's game was very, you know, like up
black
front in your face, aggressive gameplay. But Johnny was like not on the episodes because he was much more behind the scenes, like doing stuff that wasn't directly impacting things in a very clear, straightforward line. And so we in this season in that mattered a lot more last season because there was a lot of stuff happening. But this season it is focused a lot more on Dane and Adam, who are the more direct, you know, movers and shakers. Whereas I do think they have trouble, you know, articulating the style of gameplay that Anthony has, which is a lot more like, I'm going to influence this person here and this person here, and then they're going to go and do the work after I tell them what to do. And so, you know, unless they really focused and said, hey, it's all about Anthony, I think they struggle with depicting that and getting everything else in too.
That could also be, though, a byproduct of whether or not Anthony is good for them in the DR or not. You know, if Anthony's not giving them the DR they want, but Dane is, it's easy to show the pretty boys move with Dane you know, giving them everything they want in the DR, being toothless and goofy. And, you know, so it might be easier to just show the move with Dane because he's a more cooperative guy in the DR.
I'm now picturing Anthony in the diary room and how he must speak to them.
Right.
So here's what I did is that I talked to Adam and I told him about our castle and how we're lions. And so that's what's really going on right now.
Right. Exactly. So if they're not getting a clear picture from Anthony in the DR, then it's just easier to edit that as a Dane mastermind. Which, yeah. By the way, greatest moment of the episode for me was Dane pushing the boxes.
Oh, classic. Classic. Like, I've already seen the GIF on Twitter. Oh, my gosh. It was great. Oh,
spectacular.
I loved Dane like smashing pillows into the bed.
Where the camera hell shake is Kiki? She did not tell the kid that Taryn. Now look, I've been working a little bit over the past few days, but I'm totally caught up on feeds. Did she not tell Sam any of that? That Dane was this upset that you won HOH. He was mad. He was pissed. He was throwing things. He said, "How can we let this happen?" Like, I mean, she didn't say any of that to Sam, did she?
Trent, that would. That'd be betraying Dane. What are you talking about? Why would anybody do that?
Christ! Like, and, how do you not do that?
That's betraying right Esty by proxy.
Yeah.
As soon as you say negative things about Dane, then you're hurting Esty's feelings. And she won't hurt Esty's feelings.
Oh, God.
All right. So we also saw the, you know, ultimately the nominations here, Mark and Kiki, which I feel like I'm not sure because it's hard to sort of see the from the perspective of a show only viewer. But for me, I saw a lot of Sam in the diary room talking about like, I got to split up these guys. I've got to make sure a guy goes home. I'm looking at Dane. I'm looking at Anthony. I'm looking at Mark. And then all of a sudden it was Kiki, you've lied to me. I know you're coming for me. Kiki, you're on the block. And so is Mark. And I'm not sure that I felt like the show explained why that happened, but I could be mistaken here, Ryan. What did you think?
I mean, we've seen it over and over and over again. Every HOH that's won it that wasn't a direct pretty boy has said, you know, I really think there's something going on with those four dudes. And they've come up by name a couple of times. And then they turn around and go, so I'm going to really do something about that. And backdoor Mama K. Like, what good does that do you? It didn't do Chelsea any good. It didn't do anyone any good with the targets. And this week, it's the same thing. You know, Sam says to Adam directly, I'm afraid that you've got something going on the side, not realizing that she's the side. You know, like, really, he's got the pretty
right.
boys and Sam's the side alliance for him. You know, and so, I mean, you know, maybe showman's whatever. We'll see.
No, I think you're fair. No, you're fair. As things stand right now, I do believe that she is the side piece and she doesn't realize she's the side piece necessarily. I am not sure, however, if Adam is sure of that right now. I think that Adam may actually, in the end, choose Sam.
I think he will. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how I think that depends on how deep in the game it gets. I mean, you would have thought that John would keep Netta.
it's true.
So
I think that the more likely outcome is that Adam eventually goes on the block with Sam. And at that point, it's like, sorry, but it's me over you. However, if it came down to like final five, final six, whatever, and, you know, it's like Adam wins the HOH and it's only Sam or a pretty boy, I think Adam's going to try to get Sam through if he can.
I think that might be in a final five type situation. I just don't know that they're there yet. I think now when you look at it, I think Adam might still choose the pretty boys for long-term gain rather than Sam at this point. I think the closer to the end of the game you get, the easier it is to pick Sam. But I think if he had to choose tomorrow, I think he sends Sam home over Dane. At this point, because I think that Dane would protect him in an HOH situation. You know, if Sam and Dane were to be up against one another, for example, I think Adam evicts Sam before Dane. But, you know, we'll see whether or not Mark can come into that play too, because he's already walking around talking about breaking up the pretty boys and targeting them. So we'll see if he survives this week or if he lets his mouth get ahead of him and says something to someone who runs, but you know, talks to Corey, who runs to Anthony, and then Mark finds himself out the door.
Yeah, Mark is an interesting person to focus in on here because he was talking to the cameras a lot about how he wanted to take a shot at the double eviction. He was predicting that the double eviction was coming and that if he could win that HOH, that he would take a shot and try to get Dane out of the house by nominating two pretty boys. He said it in the diary room. He said it to us on the cameras. And then they opened the lounge. And you saw in the episode, he noticed all of the TVs on the wall, and they've been speculating that maybe people have been watching clips of the feeds. And so Mark was very worried about that because he's been talking to the cameras so much about how he wants about the pretty boys and how he wants to betray them. And so he went to Dane and was like, Dane, just in case, you know, anybody saw anything, maybe that just want to let you know that I maybe have said some things about you in the alone by myself. But it was just, you know, I was just mad at you at one time. It doesn't mean anything. Don't worry about it if you hear anything. And so he is not talking to the cameras anymore. So it's harder to get an insight into what he's thinking.
Thank you, Big Brother Canada. Oh, yeah, we can never have predicted when you showed, like, you know, behind the scenes stuff during the first freaking episode about what people said privately and threw a couple people under the bus that this would ever happen, that somebody would say, oh, I get spooked by the fact that you did that. So thank you. Totally sarcastic.
Yeah, that anybody has spent any time talking about targets privately to the feeds is awful. You know, after they expose them on night one, they don't ever that anybody thinks, oh, yeah, I should be talking by myself right now and get away with it is baffling to me.
Which sucks.
Nothing safe.
And it definitely does suck because now, I feel like we're not really getting a super clear picture in the diary room. We heard from Mark that, I missed my chance in the double eviction. So now I need to ride with the pretty boys a little bit longer before I get another chance. He seems to really be set on targeting them only during double or triple evictions. And so in my eyes, he's looking forward now to the triple eviction. And once the triple eviction comes, he's going to really try and win that HOH and take a shot at the pretty boys. I think that's a much better time to take a shot at them anyway, and that he was maybe saved from himself in the fact that he did not win the double eviction HOH, because I think another part of what happened here is that I feel like the fact that he got nominated right now this week has put a little scare into him, maybe made him realize that he doesn't have as many other allies as he may have thought. And so, now he's in the diary room talking about like, hey, my pretty boy is going to keep me safe. right? Don't you mess with me.
you've nominated part of the greatest alliance ever. That's what he said, right?
I mean, it is the greatest season 7 Big Brother Canada alliance ever.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
There has never been
high praise.
A better season 7 alliance.
Actually, I mean, it might be the case that this is going to be the longest lasting Big Brother Canada alliance. You know, we're getting close here at this point. You know, first 5 lasted until right around jury, right? So
right before. Yeah.
I don't know.
I will say this. Let me just say this really quickly, because people keep, you know, they come onto my Twitter and they want me to spill the tea and go after people and rant or whatever. Okay, here's the thing. I'm with you guys. I am annoyed with this season. I am not necessarily with Tarrant in that, oh, well, I've been really enjoying the feeds, even though we're not getting what we want. I'm a fan first, and then, like, strategies, like, you know, somewhere down the line. So it has been really annoying. On the other hand, here's the thing. Like, things cannot stand still for much longer. After this week, we're going to be down to 9 people. We're at jury. Everybody has a little side piece. Anthony has Corey, Dane. He may have 1 or 2 people, depending on how things shake out. Adam has Sam. And so this is when things are going to start cracking, when somebody wants to get rid of your side piece before they get rid of their side piece. And then you start distrusting them and resentment starts to build and then everything goes to shit. So I think that very quickly things will devolve. I'm hopeful that they devolve quickly, because if they devolve quickly, then that means that Damien, who is everybody's favorite, many people's favorite, including many people who are fans of this podcast, he doesn't have anybody. He's not really doing anything. So if anything gets exposed, I feel like he'll be low man on the totem pole and we'll have a glide path to the final 4. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I don't know. For me, I think that the pretty boys, their loose control over the house and the fact that it's been rubber banding for weeks now. Like, oh, are they going to break free? No, they're not. Are they going to break free? No, they're not. And the way that they are managing to control that and the different methods that each of the players uses, it's very, it's been very entertaining, I think. And a lot of people, I think, are, you know, having an experience with the feeds that is far beyond the sort of monotonous, you know, today they had a pool tournament that lasted hours and nothing was happening. Like the feeds up, like the last few days compared to that pool tournament, like it's night and day, right? And I do think that there is enough tension between these guys that we are not going to see a brigade. They get to the final three and shake hands. I think we're going to see, like, pick your side of the pretty boys, because war is going to break out in a couple weeks. And I think that we're going to get some good fights along the final stretch of the game. So speaking of Mark being one of them, clearly already talking about taking a shot. Now, there's been a lot of debate about whether or not he's been lying to us, I guess, or whether he will actually take a shot. I am inclined to believe that he will. I tweeted out that something that, you know, I feel like is not being talked about is that, you know, Mark, it just got put on the block. And if the pretty boys are trying to save him, if that's what's going to happen, then they'd be unintentionally saving what might be their biggest threat in the game, because he's one of the only people that would actually put two of them on the block together, because he knows where the bodies are buried and he knows how to make things happen. So, you know, I feel like that there's a dramatic irony happening there if the pretty boys do their best to make sure that Mark stays this week, Ryan.
I think part of the problem with that, though, is I don't know that Mark has the social capital to pull that off.
Well, I mean, all he needs to do is have two of them on the block at the same time, right?
Even if you know where the bodies are buried and you put two of them on the block at the same time, it gives two of them and possibly the third one the opportunity to pull one down and send somebody else home. So I don't get the read from when, you know, the little bit of feeds I've dipped my toe into this year and watching your recap shows in the morning and stuff like that. I don't know that Mark has the social capital to pull that move off. I think if you can get to a Thursday with a non-pretty boy up against a pretty boy, I still think that the pretty boys can work their way around getting somebody evicted. You have to get two of the pretty boys on the block on a Thursday, and that's more difficult than you think.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually, to Mark's credit, part of why he wants to do it on a double or a triple eviction.
Right.
And I think now in particular, if, you know, exactly, anticipating a triple, if he can just put all three of them up, or even just two of them at that point, then he's in a pretty decent spot to make sure that that he breaks it up. And I'm still not entirely sure the, like, specifics of his plan of, like, who of the pretty boys he wants to take out and what his plan is after he takes out. I know Dane is the biggest target of his, but I don't know if he plans on then working with the remainder, or if he plans on, like, just blowing everything up and then hoping that everyone turns on each other and he can sit back. I don't know, because he's not talking to cameras anymore.
By the way, I'm not sure, he might be waiting a long time for that triple. I don't know if there is a triple happening this time. People on Twitter have done the numbers and it doesn't look like there's enough people left in the house to do a triple. Mm-hmm. So either we're going to have a buyback, or the blood veto thing might freeze the nominations or reset week or whatever the hell. And, you know, then we could get a triple.
Eviction night dies. Yeah, halting hex rise.
Veto. Say it, Darren.
maybe a blood veto. Blood veto is you save the person who was about to be evicted.
Yeah, something like that. Or after the fact. Yeah,
it opens the door for a triple. You know, Arissa announces the vote. No, I've decided to play my blood veto and this person's staying, which allows the person who holds the blood veto to effectively control nomination, or control evictions the rest of the way, so they can see somebody.
Yeah, one thing that we talked about on Thursday with Paris, that Tom Palmer on Twitter had tweeted out, and a theory for the blood veto, which is that the blood veto holder maybe gets to take somebody off the block with no replacement, therefore just immediately evicting the other person, basically just choosing which one to evict yourself, getting the blood on your hands. I think that kind of makes sense in the sense that Kira could not be able to be on the block in order for that to work, which is why they're safe this week. It could make sense in the fact that, you know, hey, it's not that we got rid of the vote, it's that we moved the vote to you had to vote for whoever gets the vote for the eviction. Right. So I think there are some hints that that could be a viable theory. But who knows? That's just another one that I wanted to make sure I brought up again, because it does kind of fit the clues.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would also work even if she is nominated, or they, excuse me.
That's okay.
Even
if they I stumbled too.
They could pull themselves off.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing saying that it would have to be for that moment. Well, I've pulled myself off the block, and now your only option is a unanimous vote to send this other person home. You know, it's possible that might play in even if they are nominated.
I think that all of the ideas that we have thought of are probably likely way better than what it actually does.
the twist is you go into the diary room to vote, to cast your vote to evict, and they pour blood on you. You got slimed.
Like Terry.
You get a softer couch to cast your vote from. What the hell was that bed thing, Taryn? What the hell was that?
Yeah, you're voting for a have-not to get a bed.
I'm sure, like you said on your recap, I'm sure that really is helping Kiki's games.
Yeah.
Everybody who voted for her, she really needs
that. Have-not room is a joke. Compared to last season, that have-not room is not a have-not room. It's just a comfortable place to hang out.
Yeah, you could theoretically drown in the have-not room last time.
Yes, right. You could have died in the have-not room last year. This year, it's a dentist chair, which is kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah,
no.
Kind of like an uncomfortable recliner.
Yeah, when people are voluntarily just like hanging out on those chairs, you know it's not the worst have-not room in the world. Yeah. But
Johnny really liked to hang out in the have-not room last year because it's
true.
His whole
it's his lair.
He likes to throw shade in the have-not room.
Yeah, so I think every have-not room has their fans.
I'm leaving because I choose to.
Yeah.
All right. So, so we also saw the Sam. Okay. So let's go back to Sam's nominations here.
Yes.
And the fact that she has put up Mark and Kiki. Now, for the show only watchers, if you are curious about like what exactly went into this decision, it mainly had to do with the fact that Adam was doing his best to reassure Sam that Dane is not coming for her. She wanted to return the favor. Remember, during Dane's HOH week, when he went after Chelsea, he made a deal with Sam saying that they would protect each other until the jury, that they would not target each other, and Dane, you know, stood by his word theoretically, and did not backdoor Sam, and so she felt like she needed to reciprocate that and did not want to put Dane on the block. Also, she felt like she didn't have the numbers to get Dane out, even if she put him up on the block. She didn't, I think, realize that maybe Dane would leave over Anthony. But she might have also been right that even if Dane had gone up against Anthony, that Anthony might have left. That's you know, that one's a little bit up in the air. Although I would say raw numbers, before, you know, just theorizing, I'd say Anthony would leave. But given Anthony's ability and what he's done this week so far, I would say that he'd probably be able to convince people to keep him. So so that was maybe a way to get Dane out. But I don't think Sam saw it. So she was going to leave Dane out of it. And so then her idea was, well, maybe Corey and Anthony, because they're seen as a bit of a duo. So if I can put Corey and Anthony up. And Kira said no. Not Anthony, not Corey. You can't put them up. I feel really close with them. You know, I think I'm in good with Anthony. So we should try to pull them in and use them as numbers. You should go after Kiki. And Adam was fine as long as there was one of the nominees that wasn't a pretty boy. And so that's how we ended up with the Kiki and Mark nominations here, Brent.
Yeah, really frustrating all around. I think everybody on Twitter wanted to pull their hair out. You know, look, I mean, here's the thing. If Kiki ends up going home, it is totally and 100% her fault. Not only, like, totally disregarding the blood veto thing, which could have saved her this week and got her to jury, but the fact that she's so terrible at the Big Brother game itself, just talking to someone and pretending that she likes them is a chore for her. Talking to someone and trying to convince them strategically why they shouldn't put her up on the block is something that is completely it's an anathema to her to be able to put forward an argument that says, here's why you shouldn't put me on the block, and here's what keeping me in the game will do for you moving ahead. It's just, oh, I was never coming after you, which is a total lie, and Sam knows that. At least they showed that part in the episode. I'm just like, really, like, everybody who we stan on Twitter, Karen, they have no cojones whatsoever. It's just a bunch, like, I'll say this, Ryan, I haven't written this on Twitter, but I think I mentioned it in a few replies. I just want to apologize to the people, the cast of Big Brother Canada 6, for anything negative I might have ever said about them, because I have my, you know, my druthers on who I thought should win and what, how the game I wanted it to go. But my God, you guys played your asses off. Everybody was going to freaking win in that game. And it really just pisses me off that we have people that just lay down and die, want to go along to get along. I can't remember one person who went along to get along last season. I'm looking for someone who did, and I can't think of one.
On behalf of my season, I accept your apology.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
And I'm one of the few that doesn't have you blocked, so I would have done that.
Oh, anyway. Yes. I know, right? Thank you.
You're right. I think everybody in our season gamed their asses off. But at the same time, I wonder, you saw what happened last year, and I think the level of gameplay was at a different level last year. I think it was on a fairly intellectual standpoint. I mean, even the people that were in our house that you'd look at and go, you know, I don't know if they're the sharpest guy in the house. I still think that they're probably a sharp person outside the house. It was just by comparison for most of the people in there. I think this year, I don't know if the aggregate IQ test scores are as high.
And that's at least.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to shit on anybody.
No. I think it's fair.
You know, but yeah. At the same, like, I just wonder if it wasn't easier to, you know, well, let's see what this average is, you know, and see if we lower the overall kind of, you know, change the emotional threshold of people in the house, or change, you know, change whatever psychological thing they wanted from last season into this season. And I think as a result, you've got Dane walking around calling himself an idiot, but still looking like a strategic genius when you watch the episode. So how is Dane's plan always coming to fruition if he himself is calling himself a dummy? So I think that might be the difference between this season and last. I think you've got a different type of player this year than you had last year.
Yeah, I remember like at the start of the season, maybe even before the season started, I was theorizing that I felt like a lot there were much fewer fans of the show in the cast this year. And of the fans that we had, very few of them were like really like into the community watching live feed fans, as opposed to last year when we had like half the cast knowing this podcast. And so I felt like that might have been intentional, because they had so much trouble keeping up with all of the gameplay in season 6 that they were like, you know what, let's try and lower the overall average gameplay level, IQ, whatever you want to call it, so that we have an easier show to edit, a simpler storyline that we can give people. And so far, I do think that is successful in terms of the edited shows. I think that they're relatively accurate to what's happening in the house, and they're able to put together some entertaining episodes, but I do think it has, you know, impacted the level of strategy and fun on the feeds, where, you know, last season it was everybody, like, you couldn't, no, not a single person last season was just like a puppet walking around. Even like the people that you might call puppets, like, they had enough of a mind of their own that they went off and did some stupid things sometimes. Right.
But Taryn, like, to be fair, it's like, to me, and I'm just gonna, I don't know if anybody agrees with me on this, but it's the women this season that are the disappointment. Not that people like Damian know what the hell's going on, because he doesn't know what's going on, but, and he should be indicted also, because he at least saw Adam and Dane go into the room together on the first night when he was, you know, in the Leon's lounge watching them, for heaven's sake, and he's still never done anything with that freaking information. Of course, I'm sure maybe he doesn't know if it's true still or not, but he did see it. But it's the women compared to, like, the women of last season, like, you know, Erica and and Kayla and Paris and even Maddie, people that are just like were gaming their asses off and they were like really trying, like, okay, how can I win this game? How can I get myself to the end? And what am I going to do if I get power? Now it's just go along to get along. And I can't stand it. Like, I never really thought this would happen on Big Brother Canada because they always do such a good job of casting their women. And this season, I have to call them out. They've done a really, really shitty job. I don't know if it was the cast necessarily, but the people who were there playing in the house, like, even like, I'm sorry, I'm going to call her out too. Chelsea, listening to her exit interview with you, I was like, where was this woman in the house? Because this isn't the same woman I was like watching on the feed for the last 3 or 4 weeks. All of this chutzpah that you have talking to Taryn Armstrong. And where were you? You were nowhere to be found. You were like, you were getting out Mama K. That's what you were doing.
I'll say, I think something else that contributed to it is, you know, again, like, even if they're fans of the show, they're not like super knowledgeable about the show. So they can go in and they learn from their experience. And I think part of what has shaped this season is that the Pretty Boys won the first three out of, or was it even four out of five HOH competitions?
Something like that.
And so they set the tone. They have been in power for so long. They, like, everybody learning how to play this game, learning what this game is, has learned under the tutelage of the Pretty Boys. And that shapes the entire house, that shapes how everyone plays the game. And so players that may have otherwise been, if they had been in Big Brother Canada 6, maybe they would have learned a different game and been much more active and intelligent players. But in this house, that's not how people play the game.
Yeah,
and so they don't react
that
way.
I have to believe like Kayla or Paris or Maddie or somebody, if they heard Adam, right, he said, you know, like basically admitting to a guy's alliance, say, oh, I really trust Dane. We have an agreement. Like, I trust the guys. I trust Anthony. I mean, he's all but said the name. And still, it never took hold.
Well, that's what I mean, where like Kayla and Paris and Johnny, those were people that did know what the game is really. They knew about the feeds. They had seen this. They'd been on Twitter. They'd been following discussions. They'd listened to podcasts. They wouldn't go in there and just learn, oh, this is just what Big Brother is. They would have been like, this is not what Big Brother is supposed to be. But we don't have anybody like them in this house. And I think that's really one of the major differences and one of the reasons why we are where we are.
And sometimes from experience, you can tell somebody right to their face that something is happening. And that doesn't mean they're going to believe it, buy it, or go along with you. I mean, there were times where I'd tell people right out, hey, like, this is what's happening right in front of us. And if you ignore it, it's to your detriment.
I remember that.
We need to move on. You know, we need to, you know, it was Ali, Liv, Derek, and Kayla protecting each other until the triple. And everyone, no, that's not what's happening. They're at each other's throats. I'm like, no, if you're not, like, you got to pay attention to what's going on around you. And just because you can recognize it, even super fans are going, well, I don't know that that's happening, because it's not your immediate belief of what's happening at that moment. So
go ahead. I was going to say that, Taryn, when you something you said really hit me, and I, like, as I've been watching the feeds especially the last 72 hours, really, really, I was like, you know what, this is definitely what's happening. You said something to the effect of, it's easier for people to believe the lie because to confront the truth means that they have to challenge their own worldview of how they see themselves within the Big Brother universe, within mm-hmm. this game. But to actually look at the truth of what's going on means you have to confront your own mortality within the game, because all of a sudden you're not as safe as you once thought you were. If what this person who's trying to talk to you is saying is true, you're screwed. You're not as safe. Like, Sam, you're in trouble, girl, after this week, if they're telling you the truth. But you don't want to believe that. You want to believe that, oh, I can maybe get in there. And who knows, after this week, maybe she can, I don't know. But not from where things stand at the end of this episode, I'll say that.
Yeah, and not only that, but you also have to accept the fact that you've been duped for the last 6 weeks.
That's what Chelsea could not do.
By these doofuses.
Yes, Chelsea could not accept the fact that she was duped, that she had been had by these doofuses. And it was that she couldn't believe that. It's the truth.
Well, one more thing I want to bring up before we go to spoilers is we saw them go to Wendy's and we saw Rosina as the Wendy's server. And I mentioned this, I feel like easily so far the best customer service of any Wendy's employee. that we've seen on the show.
I'm really looking forward to seeing her conversation with Sam when they put that up, because I'm desperate to know the questions that Sam had for Rosie. Rosie, I can tell you, is one of the sweetest human beings you will ever meet. And to me, it's criminal that we evicted her first. The more you would have gotten of Rosie on the feeds, the more you would have loved her. Rosie's spectacular. And I couldn't have been happier when I saw the window open and it was Rosie standing there. It really made me smile.
And she was so great, Tara. She was so warm and fun and huggy and touchy-feely. I love it because you're like, you can't trust anybody in the Big Brother house. You know, they're all snakes. So to have somebody who, you know, okay, I can trust this person just for a second, you know, to give me my meal and it's not poison. It's cool. I was really, really happy that she was there.
Yeah, Rosina is one of those players that, like, anytime I've ever talked to a Big Brother Canada alumni, they all say, Rosie is just the best. We love her. She's amazing.
Which is why we evicted her.
Yeah. What can you do?
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into spoilers here. So if you are a show only viewer, this is when this is your chance to tune out. If you want to, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Armstrong Taryn. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. Ryan, where can people find you?
At BB Can Ryan.
All right.
Is the spot.
There you go. Make sure you follow Ryan. I will be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern to update you on everything that's happening on the Big Brother Canada 7 live feeds. Tomorrow night, we'll be live with the roundtable. And then, of course, Thursday night, we'll be back to recap the eviction episode of Big Brother Canada 7. So here's your chance to leave. If you don't want to hear the spoilers about what's been happening this week, you can go now. Leave. Don't ever come back. We don't want you here. Leave.
I never loved you. Wait, Taryn, where's Melissa to sing the spoiler song? You were such a coward with Paris the other night. Like, you couldn't
coward.
Even say, like, that I was the person. Melissa has never sang the spoiler song before.
No, because people say that it sounds exactly like Melissa.
Oh, sure.
You do the buzzing.
Okay, well, that's fair. All right.
Yeah.
All
right, calling me a coward. All right, so here we go with the spoilers. So we have played the veto. Adam was playing in the veto, which should give you a hint that Adam has won the veto. I talked about this morning, but this means that Adam has won 4 out of 6 competitions that he has played in. Erica's record was 4 out of 8. So he has already kind of beat that in some ways, at least. And this is crazy. This is crazy. He is doing very well here in these competitions, Brent.
Yeah, and Ryan, he doesn't appear to be a bigger target than Sam for some reason to a lot of people. Of course, he has the pretty boys behind him, but if I was any of those boys, I'd be thinking, this is the kind of dude is tough to beat within these crazy Big Brother games that they have. So I don't know that I'd want to be facing him, like, say, after Final 8, Final 7. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how Adam doesn't have a target on him despite winning everything. You know, and like you said, 4 out of 6. Is really impressive to this point. I think he didn't even compete in one of the vetoes that he should have because he was HOH. Like,
two of them.
We wanted to talk to you about that. How do you feel about that rule? I have come around on it, Taryn. I have come around on the HOH not playing in the veto. I mean, like, I still think it was an unnecessary change, but I'm okay with it. What do you think, Ryan?
Based on the dominance of the HOHs we've had so far in competitions, being Dane and Adam, I'm okay with it as a mechanism for this season. I don't know that I like it in general, but I think right now it gives us the best opportunity for nominees to get themselves off the block because powerhouses are winning HOH. And I think when we, by the time I was evicted, maybe even further down in the season, all of the HOHs won veto at some point in our season as well. So I think that might have done it too, because the HOH, when they win the veto, are almost never going to then backdoor somebody and get them out. I would have tried. And Erica did it on our season.
Ryan, when you were HOH, what big move did you do when you were HOH?
I evicted my best friend.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Brilliant move.
Who I'm going to see tomorrow. I'm flying out to Toronto and we're going to hang out. But look, Like, there was a lot of conversation that happened before that, and I promise you that it could have worked. But the Croft Estates and their $5,000. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I think by taking the HOH out, it does allow for more gameplay. So as a traditionalist, I'm bothered by the idea. As a guy, you know, when they asked me who one of my favorite players was, I always say Nokomis, because she changed the game with the, you know, now it's a random draw for Vito, because of Nokomis, and the importance of using the Vito and the HOH using the Vito in that way.
Right.
I think, so as a traditionalist, I'm not 100% on board yet. I'll see how it translates this season. It seemed to work. I mean, Kiki's pulled herself off the block twice with Vito's, if I'm not mistaken. And
well, yeah, Sam pulled her off once.
The other thing too is, Ryan, it's I think that because of the fact that they cannot compete in the Vito's, it's effectively made the targets on Dane and Adam smaller. So if they were competing in all of these Vito competitions as the current reigning HOHs, I have to believe that they would have won a couple of these, like, but you know, the double, the HOH Vito combination, in which case I don't even feel like the dumbest house guest would be able to ignore that. But I do feel like, currently speaking, Taryn, that they are able, somehow they haven't put two and two together yet that they need to get these guys out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think obviously they would have had a really decent chance to win these vetoes if they were in them. Adam has won 66% of the competitions he's played in. Dane has won 50% of the competitions he's played in. So if they were both playing in the two vetoes that they were in, they were the HOH for, I think very decent chance that they also win those vetoes.
Yeah, and they weren't all the competitions they won, Ryan. They aren't just physical competitions. Like, Dane won that crazy buzzer competition, which
all kinds of different stuff.
And Adam won the questions competition. So, it's all over the place.
Good yeah. And this,
are
this
Adam's only two losses to Dane.
He lost an HOH to Dane, and he lost an HOH to Chelsea. I don't know who he was up against. That was a pick.
Yeah.
Your,
a buzzer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it is really interesting seeing that it is kind of taking the target off these guys by not having them compete. I would have liked to have seen, I mean, again, it's just more steamrolling of the season. I don't mind the idea that you've got five people who might have a motive to use the veto when you know you have one who probably doesn't. And that might be a byproduct of who's in the house this year, but I just don't see the backdoor happening for a lot of these people. A going in strategy.
Okay, cool.
That I'm starting my week with a backdoor plan.
Yeah. I mean, that's something. So that's something that I thought about when there was initially announced that the HOH was not going to play in the veto. I was wondering, like, what kind of impact this might have. And, you know, the initial thought was, well, this is a huge disadvantage to the HOH, but there are usually unintended consequences. But maybe this was an intended consequence on the part of Trevor Boris or whoever came up with this particular idea. And I do think that one of the things that I theorized, which is that it might take some heat off of the HOH. I do think that has come into play a little bit because people do see Dane and Adam as competition beasts, really the main thing that always makes people scared of you in competitions is winning HOH and veto. It's back to back wins, and now you can't have back to back wins. And even if Adam won four competitions in a row that he played in, it still has a much different perspective. You perceive it differently than Adam just won two competitions in a row or three competitions in a row. It helps diffuse the situation.
Back to back can only happen if you win veto and then win the following HOH.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a mental reset anyway. Once the veto's been won and used, by the time you get to the HOH, you're 4 or 5 days away. It's not 2 or 3 days. And 5 days is a big amount of time in that house to have forgotten about, oh yeah, they also won the previous veto, because you're already thinking about the next nomination ceremony and how to keep yourself off the block. So I think you're right. The idea that the only way you go back to back is in two competitions that aren't psychologically linked in that way is a big advantage for guys that are winning that many competitions.
Yeah. So something else we should talk about, Brent, you queued it up a little bit before the spoiler break, but Kiki is really just sinking her own ship at this point. So Adam has the veto and he is not going to use the veto as of right now. So Kiki and Mark will remain on the block, barring any blood veto shenanigans. And Kiki has, Kira was stirring some stuff up with Corey and Anthony. Kira really trusts Anthony. Kira thinks that they have made some kind of crack in the guy's thing because Corey told them that he was not trusting Mark. And so they were like, I did it. They don't trust each other anymore. And meanwhile, Kiki was very frustrated with Kira with all the pot stirring and really was, kind of not liking Sam and Adam as much because she was hearing that Adam was kind of flipping the vote a little bit. And when Kiki talks to somebody that she doesn't like, she makes it very obvious that she doesn't like them. And she even has talked to the cameras about this problem. She talks about, like, guys, it's just so awkward in here with people. I don't know how to talk to them. It's just so weird and awkward. And I don't like it. I just like hanging out with the people that I do like. We can sit in comfortable silence. It's nice. And it's just like, this is why you're going home right now.
This is 101 Big Brother, Ryan. This is like the base thing you have to be able to do in a game. Is just get along with someone who you vehemently dislike and have just a regular old conversation with them. I don't understand why this is so hard.
I also don't understand why it's so hard because you're so bored in there all the time.
Yes.
You run out of conversations with people. If you don't start having a conversation with somebody you haven't talked to in a while, it's just boring. You end up doing what I heard our Final Five did last year, would just sit on a chair in the backyard for 8 hours and not move. I tried to be in conversations as much as I could. You know, I knew Allie hated me for a good portion of the game and for a good portion after the game. But I still made, I went out of my way to talk to her all the time. You know, you don't know whether or not you're going to find that connection and find that sliver of conversation that's going to make that connection with somebody unless you talk to them. And even if you know that they've got no interest in talking to you, sometimes you have to talk at them because you might find that one detail that connects you and makes you a little more difficult to evict.
And this is even more ridiculous, Ryan, because Kiki's on the block. Kira is voting. Not only that, they happen to have a blood veto, which of course they may or may not use, but that's besides the point. They're voting. They're voting. And there's seven people voting this week. Every vote is important. And Kiki just cannot be bothered to put on a happy face for Kira.
Yeah.
It is boggling to me.
Some people can't get out of their own way.
She totally deserves to go home. Like, I want her to go home.
And Kiki's still young, right?
Yeah.
Kiki, what, 22, 23?
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Jaren, I forget. But
maybe
she just
hasn't gotten that wisdom of people who I don't like are somewhat important to me or could be.
Well, the sad thing is, Taryn, if she stayed in the house, I feel like she'd go after Sam. So I'm not even that bothered by the fact that she's going home. I'd rather Mark stay.
I mean, it is probably better for Sam that Mark stays, which is weird. I feel like she probably, and I don't want to theorize too much, but it seems like she doesn't have a lot of experience dealing with people that she doesn't like. And that's kind of a good thing in real life sometimes, that like if you don't like people, then you know you don't have to hang out with them. But in the Big Brother game
on Twitter,
them on Twitter, yes, exactly.
In the Big Brother game, you need to have that skill, and she very much does not, which makes it very ironic that her secret that was exposed was that she was a good liar, because it's not the case.
Not the case at all. I completely forgot about that, actually.
So Kira caught on to the fact that Kiki is just not a fan of them right now, and they went to Sam. Sam had been convinced by Adam, who was coached up by Anthony, because Anthony wanted to make sure that Corey was safe and that Kiki left. So Anthony convinced Adam that Kiki needed to go instead of Corey. Then he talked to Adam and told him what to say to Sam. Adam said that to Sam. Sam was convinced that Kiki needed to go. And then Kira came to Sam by themselves to say, I feel like the girls are playing us a little bit. And Sam was like, Perfect timing. I think they are too. guess what? Kiki said your name. And just like that, the plan is set in place as of right now that Mark will be staying. Kiki will be leaving. Sam and Kira are on board with this. The funny quote that I said this morning is that, Kira said, I think I did it. I cracked the boys thing. And Sam said, yeah. And so Kira said, so we can afford to keep Mark this week because I've cracked, because Anthony told me that he doesn't trust Dane, and Anthony is always tells the truth, and I feel really good with him.
Yeah,
so
he always tells the truth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
This is just such a mess. But the thing is, like, I was at least hoping that the Pretty Boys would be exposed by virtue of their votes. Like, in order to keep Mark, they would have had to show their cards. But now, HOH and everybody else are now on board with getting rid of Kiki, so nothing's going to come of it anyway. The only good thing we're getting out of this week is that, number one, Damien's safe. Number two, Mark's staying in the house, and he might be crazy enough to go after the Pretty Boys themselves. And as Darren notes, he knows they're in an alliance together, so he knows who to put up if he wants to get rid of them. Social capital be damned. Out of all of that, though, I'm just so disappointed in Kiki. And I, like I said, I started to say, I really want her to be evicted because I really just want to... I want to tell her how disappointed I am with her. Like, well, what are you doing? You're going for $100,000.
You don't want to have to wait until after
gave
jury?
Up. Ah, no, yeah, that's the thing. She's not even injured, so she'll be coming out. And she's the last person that Taryn will probably get the interview. I don't know how they, Taryn, I forget how they do the, did you get to talk to
well,
her?
Yeah,
I did, yeah.
Taryn and I talked to that jury.
I just had to be very robotic.
Yes. Yeah, there's none.
Yes, I could remember.
The questions were very I think they were agreed to in advance or something.
Yeah, I have to send them the questions in advance.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, anyway, so I hope, look, if she can pull herself out of this, God bless her. On the other hand, that means Marco, so you know, who knows. And I don't trust Kiki to make the right move. Like, we have been banging our heads up Twitter collectively up against the wall this week because she will not take the path that we want her to take. She wants to go after Sam. She's not having it. She doesn't, even like when she started to wrap her head around the idea that Dane is in an alliance with the boys, I mean, maybe that'll work, or, you know, maybe we can't even do anything about that right now. Maybe it's best to work within it. There was no plan really to do anything about that. I mean, there was a plan, but she wasn't being truthful when she talked to Sam about it. So then Sam heard that, you know, hey, you're actually lying to me. It just, she's terrible at this game. Get out.
Yes. Oh, and so, you know,
take her with you.
Sophia in the chat says, joining you guys from Sweden, and I must say, you're making me depressed about how many bad people there are playing the game right now, how bad they are at playing the game. So I guess one last thing to bring up here, to maybe focus a little more on the good gameplay, is what Anthony was doing yes. yesterday. He really, there was a lot of talk. Adam had convinced Sam to maybe go after Corey, but which would have made Dane really happy. Dane had been pushing for that for a while. There's really starting to become this kind of civil war in the Pretty Boys Alliance, where they're trying to vie to protect their own side pieces and go after the others. So Dane really wanted to take Corey out because that would cripple Anthony, and Anthony was like, no, you are not getting Corey. I've got Corey on lock. We are taking Kiki out. And Anthony won the battle. He convinced Adam. Convinced Sam. He convinced Kira that they were good enough with him, that they could trust him, and that the boys thing was all, it was cracked. He did a lot of work, and it's impressive, and it's so strange because you watch him and you don't know how it's working, but it does. I watch him talk to people like Adam, like anybody, and he's just like, so this is what we're doing. And I've done the impression 1,000 times at this point, and I'm just like, I feel like if I was being talked to this way, that I would feel very annoyed, but everybody listens to him.
Here's the thing. I think what's going on is this. The fact that they didn't cast a ton of superfans in this season, like they did last season, leads people to not be exactly sure of what they should say or what they should do. So then when you have somebody like Anthony come to you and tell you exactly what to say, you're like, oh, thank you, kind sir, for telling me exactly what I need to say to make this happen. Whereas somebody on last season would have said, go to hell, I'm not listening to you. This season, they're like, okay, I'll take what you said and try to do it. By the way, if you haven't listened to the update with Taryn and Kirsten on the recap earlier this morning, you really should, because it really covers everything about what happened with Kiki and Anthony and Dane. And by the way, Dane is not really happy right now. That should be noted. I love seeing him upset.
Dane is pissed.
I love the fact that Dane is not getting what he wants. It's so great. So that is a positive, and he's not happy about it. And he basically knows that Anthony is the cause of the fact that he's not getting what he wants, because he's losing Kiki, and that's his little trio with Kiki and Esty. So that's good. So don't be totally depressed. I'm not trying to get you depressed. I'm like, here's the good news. The people who are playing really terrible, they're being evicted. Like, yeah. All the people that are left are playing pretty good. I mean, Esty, say what you want about Esty, she's actually really good socially and talking with people. She's like, she's got a kind heart and people like to listen to her. And she doesn't like repel people when she's trying to have a conversation with them. I'm like, Kiki, everybody, like, I didn't think Eddie was not very good at the game. And this is the score I gave him last week. And I knew it was coming. Okay. Chelsea was terrible.
Brent, he's a listener.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's the score I gave you. By the way, I never knew how many reality show contestants, and Ryan, I'm not talking about you. I have no idea what you did or not, but I have found quickly how many reality show contestants go back and listen to the shit you say on podcasts because the fact, did you know that Arlie has me blocked? I didn't know who Arlie was. Oh my God. He has, because he went back and listened to some podcast from like 3 years ago where I didn't even put him in my like all-star rankings or something. Taryn, it's a creature unto itself, I must say.
All right. Well, I made this comparison a while back, but I really do feel like it's getting stronger and stronger. I feel like Anthony is a version of Derek from Big Brother 16 that doesn't know the game very well and that has really let the power go to his head. He fulfills a similar role, which, as you talked about, he's one of the few people that can see the house in a pretty clear view where he knows where everyone lies. A lot of other people have bad reads on certain people. They've been fed misinformation from somewhere. Anthony really tends to see where everyone stands, and he can speak very confidently and give advice and tell people what to do. And so because he's able to see things clearly and articulate it clear enough that people understand and then things work, they keep going back to him for this advice. And it's very effective. And it's what we saw Derek do a lot in 16. So, Anthony's doing well here, Ryan.
Yeah, I think Anthony is got, we saw Andrew on our season tell people a lot what to do. And you saw what happened in the dial of gameplay. And I think with Anthony, he's coming at it. I mean, I want to say it's a little gentler than just this is what we're doing. Right. I mean, he gets to that point in these conversations, I think, but he doesn't start there. He works people into it. And I mean, you know, he's a gas line inspector or something. So he's going to be a guy that is consistently on site dealing with new contractors, new people, and telling them what is and what isn't. And that's a skill that you develop over years of doing that kind of work. I was a kitchen inspection guy. I'd go, you know, inspect kitchens and tell people what was wrong and what wasn't. And that didn't work well with my cast with me. They found me condescending in that manner because I'd say, look, I've done this. I know what I'm talking about. Do what I say.
I can't imagine why they would have found you condescending.
Right? Yeah, I know, right? Which, I'm fine with it. It doesn't bother me.
Exactly. It's a joke. Work with me here. He knows it's a joke. Come on. Okay.
It was true. I saw some of my own gameplay. I saw, like, Anthony is spending his days meeting new people, going from site to site, developing relationships with people, and having them trust him to know what is the right thing to do based on what he's doing at their site. He's translating that skill into the house where he's telling people, look, I've looked over this. This makes sense to me. This is right. And this is what we should be doing. But he takes a little while to get there. And he's built that trust with people now to where they do believe him.
I will say, because there's some people in chat were coming after me for saying that Anthony is an excellent player or that he's done excellent this week. I mean, look, maybe excellent is a high bar. Okay. But he's done really, really good. Really good. And for somebody who, you know, I don't think is really all that familiar with the game. Again, Ike, I thought he was like on The Bachelor when she was interviewing him before the season, because he was that terrible at just communicating with her, much less the contestants within the Big Brother universe. It's really startling to see somebody who takes the game and learns it this well. And you can argue, hey, that shouldn't be working, or it wouldn't have worked with the cast from last season. But he's not playing against the cast from last season. He's playing against this cast, and this cast, it seems to be working. So, I mean, I'm basically, I call him as I see him, and what I'm seeing is pretty freaking good.
There you go. All right. Anything else that we want to bring up before we wrap this up tonight here, Brent or Ryan?
I don't know. Ryan, do you have anything to say?
No, just, I mean, unblock people on social. Jesus, it's not that bad.
I disagree. Block people and definitely block Brent. That's my stance.
The badge of honor.
All right. So make sure you follow or block us on Twitter. I'm at Armstrong Taren. Definitely block Brent at One Lucky Gay. And definitely follow Ryan here. It was BB Can Ryan.
Yep, BB Can Ryan.
All right. Again, make sure you check out the update tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern. And then tomorrow night, we will have our roundtable. And then Thursday night, the eviction recap. So plenty of stuff coming your way. I hope you are enjoying the ride, the coverage at least, if not the season, even though I'm enjoying the season. We will see you next time.
Bye.